Thank you, Rabbi Lazarus. In a way, I'm very much in awe to follow the wonderful and inspiring speakers, Choshev Rabbanim, Rosh Yeshiva, experts in Kiruv that we've had. I'm just somebody from Chutz Laaretz that needs to fill in time until we have Rev Schiller and Rev Leff. But again, I think the fact that we have so many people speaking and really so much of an ilam that's coming, I think it reminds us all of how important the inyan of Kiruv Rechaikim is. The obligation of Kiruv in our generation is really obvious. It is self-evident. It is obvious as the obligation of saving somebody from death. Because if Chazal tell us, Gadol Hamachtiyo Yaisim in Arhorgai, that to cause somebody to sin is a bigger avla than mamish killing them, then the opposite of that proposition would be to save somebody from chait, to bring somebody to the derech haTorah, is even greater than giving somebody life. It's obvious, therefore, that Kiruv Rechaikim is certainly a fulfillment of the mitzvah d'oraisa, at a minimum, of Laisamad al Damreyecha. We live in this generation in a world that is almost unparalleled, in which basically over 90% of the Jewish people have no connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. 90%. And imagine if, Baruch Hashem, you had a family that had been blessed with many children, but Rachmano Litzlan, 9 out of 10 of them died. Is our attitude to the parent, be happy that you got one, don't complain? And every single Jew is a child of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. 90% are not here. Are we supposed to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's enough that you have us? Does Hashem have us? We could be a lot better too. So, both in terms of caring about another Yid and in terms of caring about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and expressing our Avas Hashem, how can we just look by Laisamad al Damreyecha and see so many of Hashem's children who are not connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The Chassam Sofer writes in one of the Hakdamas that we find the Navi Yeshayahu refers to Avram Avinu, quoting Hashem, as Avram Ayavi, Avraham who loved me. And why of all the Avos is Avram called the one who loved me? And the Chassam Sofer says, we know that Avram was the great pioneer in Kiruv Rechaikim. The Rambam describes Avram as going from town to town, bringing together hundreds and thousands of people to try to be machnes them, tachas kanfei Ashchina. And Avram himself got involved in the most despicable groups of humanity. He prays for Sodom, and he argues for Sodom, and he bargains with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And certainly the Chassam Sofer says Avram Avinu could have achieved much greater levels had he been misbodeid, had he isolated himself, had he contemplated HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And yet Avram Avinu was willing to even be mevater over the madregos that he himself could have attained, to bring others tachas kanfei Ashchina. And that, the Chassam Sofer says, is called mesiras nefesh. When you give up your life for something, that's mesiras guf, that's not mesiras nefesh. But when you're even willing to give up some of your ruchnius to be makar of another, that's an emes of mesiras nefesh. And for that, the Chassam Sofer says, Avram is called Avram Ayavi. It is said that, you know, the Chafetz Chaim had a certain talent, it was Ruach HaKodesh, that when people would come in and they'd want to ask him shailas, he tended to always know what they needed to ask him, and he would address the issue that they were thinking about even before they said it. So it is said that the Chazon Ish, it was Yadua that the Chazon Ish, who later became the Gadol Hador, and particularly in Eretz Yisrael, but for the first 50 years of his life, he was very much a Nister. Very much, he was Isaac in his own aliyah to be able to do what he did later. And he says he once went to the Chafetz Chaim, and the Chafetz Chaim started talking about the inyan of being Mezakeh Sarabim and Kiruv Rechaikim. And the Chafetz Chaim said, you know, if I would spend all my time on my own learning, the Chafetz Chaim said, even I could have become a Talmud Chacham. He says, anybody can become a Talmud Chacham. Even I could have known how to learn. But you know, Leman Hashem, I gave up some of the Torah that I could have accomplished to be Makarv. And Chazon Ish kind of got the message that the Chafetz Chaim was telling him it was time. But what's interesting is, you see from the Chazon Ish and from the Chafetz Chaim's interaction, the other side of the story as well. I know that in Orla Gola, they're learning Yerideya, and many of you have, of course, learned Gemara and Chulin, and there's a phrase in the Dinam of Isra Veheter, Aidi de treaty lemiflat laibala. When something is pilate, when something is busy giving out, a piece of meat that's giving out, it's not able to be bileya, it doesn't absorb. And the Sifrei Drush say that this is sometimes a remez for how we best have a hashpa on other people. That sometimes, if we put all of our kochos into giving, 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 we never absorb. There's nothing in us to give. Something that's empty is not capable of giving. And the emes, therefore, is that if one truly wants to be a hashpa on others, one needs to take in as much Torah as they could take in, as much Aveda, Tikkun Hamidos, and in very, very many ways, and you've heard this over and over again from Rabbi Arlovsky and from the other speakers, so a lot of what I'm saying is going to be repeated, that the tremendous, greatest kolach in which one could be mashpia on another is not necessarily by the specific answers they have to the specific questions. Because I'll be mighty to you. When you're Isaac in Shor Shinaga Chesapara or Cheskasabatim or Ketzaisan or Nesivas, you're not going to be able to have Terutzim for the age of the earth and the dinosaurs and evolution. Because frankly, that wasn't an issue that the Ketzais is Marichan in any sense. So you might say, well, wait a second here. Isn't there a fundamental disconnect between what I'm doing in yeshiva and kailal and steiging and sugyas? And then I want to be makarev, I want to be mashpia on other people, and there seems to be no connection. I mean, shouldn't I spend my time, as it were, going through Torah and science? And of course, again, there's certainly a makam for that limbud, but shouldn't I spend like all my days on that? But the answer is, that's based on a fundamental misunderstanding. That's based, again, as Rav Arlovsky said, that's based on the problem that the reason people aren't from is because they have a problem with evolution. And Mimele, if I have a teretz on evolution, they're going to make him from. That's not the problem, and that's not the answer to the problem. But rather, if people see in your life Kedusha, if they see in your life Simcha, if they see in your life that something is going on, they'll want to have that. And all of the answers and all of the truths are good. It's good to know those things. But ultimately, the hashpa will come from the Torah that you absorb and the Avas Yisrael and the Tikkun Hamidos in which they see V'hafta es Hashem Alekecha, to make the Shem Shemayim Misoev al Yodecha, to make the Shem Shemayim beloved. I remember reading a story. It's not even any particular amazing story. Rav Chaim Eiser. Rav Chaim Eiser was not known as a speaker. Rav Chaim Eiser was not an outreach worker. He was the Gadol Hador, indeed. Tremendous, tremendous Eloi. He didn't even like to speak in public. He wasn't particularly a good speaker. But there's a story that during the Holocaust, actually Rav Chaim Eiser died in 1940, so it was very beginning, but when things were beginning to get difficult, there was a fellow, there was a Dr. Schmidt, who was a representative of the Joint Distribution Committee. He was a Reform Jew. And he had to come to Rav Chaim. He came from Cincinnati. He came to talk with Rav Chaim Eiser about the distribution of funds for refugees. A Reform Jew, they're talking about money. They're talking about business. Rav Chaim Eiser actually handled millions and millions of dollars coming through. And at the end of the conversation, Rav Chaim Eiser put his hands on Dr. Schmidt's hands and said, "Do you mind if I call you Reb Shmuel?" And Dr. Schmidt started crying because, he just never saw such a grave. He says, "Rebbe, I'm not even a Shomer Shabbos. I'm not a good Jew. I don't deserve to be honored by you." And Rav Chaim Eiser looked at him and said, "What do you mean you're not a good Jew? You come here in a time of danger. You come here at a time when you're putting your life at risk to take care of other Jews who are refugees. What do you mean you're not a good Jew? You're a Jew that I admire. You're a Jew that I'm machshiv. I want to call you Reb Shmuel." A little conversation like that. And Dr. Schmidt, who was also a journalist, recounts at the end that from the time that he was called Reb Shmuel by Rav Chaim Eiser, and he saw the Kedusha in this person, and he saw that Rav Chaim Eiser saw in him a Kedusha, he put on tefillin, he became a Baal Tshuva, he became a Shomer Shabbos. from that single conversation. We have stories of the Chafetz Chaim, that there was an individual bacher who was once expelled from Radin because he was a Mechalal Shabbos, he was smoking. And he met the Chafetz Chaim for around 5 minutes, and the person emerged crying, and he became a Shomer Shabbos. And the rabbi was telling the story, and a rabbi said, "If only I knew what the Chafetz Chaim said, I would have the secret of Kiruv Rechaikim." And as these stories often happen, maybe it's apocryphal, an old man got up from the audience and said, 60 years later, "I was that young boy, and I will tell you what the Chafetz Chaim said. He called me in. I was terrified. I mean, Chafetz Chaim, I'm smoking on Shabbos. I mean, what's going to happen?" And the Chafetz Chaim was a tiny man. You know, I was 15. I was already much taller than him. And he takes my hands, and he looks at me with the bright, shining eyes, and he starts crying and sobbing. And all he says to me are two words. He says, "Shabbos, Shabbos." And in those eyes and in those tears, and he says, "I feel the burning on my arm, on my hand, to this very day. I saw the infinite pain that a Jew had because Shabbos wasn't being kept. I saw the infinite love that he had for me, for a Yiddish neshama. And I said, how could I bring pain to such a person?" And then I thought, and if that person is only a tzelem Elokim, an imitation, as it were, of the Ribono Shel Olam, how much love the Ribono Shel Olam must have for me, and how much pain I'm causing the Ribono Shel Olam, and how could I do it? Became a Baal Tshuva. His life changed. Another story with the Chafetz Chaim. Another boy was kicked out of the Radin Yeshiva. The Chafetz Chaim says, "You can't stay here anymore. You're a bad influence. We can't have you." The boy walks away dejected, rejected. The Chafetz Chaim says, "Where are you going?" The boy says, "The Rebbe kicked me out of yeshiva." He says, "I kicked you out of yeshiva, but you can stay with me. Just because I have to worry about the other bachim, you're a bad hashpa, does that mean I don't care about you? Does that mean you don't matter? You stay with me and we'll learn." You could ask a little bit of a kasha. It's chaytei nisker, but I guess the Chafetz Chaim as a chavrusa. Maybe it's, on the other hand, maybe it's not so easy to have the Chafetz Chaim as a chavrusa. What is the point? What made these people change their lives? What made them move away to the derech of tshuva? It wasn't intellectual arguments. It wasn't answering particular questions on particular issues. It was sensing that someone cared, sensing that someone loved them, sensing the radiance of a neshama, both in terms of the makarev and in terms of the niskarev, that made them realize. It is said in the name of Rav Simcha Zissel. Rav Simcha Zissel once said that the reason Darwin said that man was descended from apes is because Darwin never met Rav Yisrael Salanter. If he would have seen Rabbi Yisrael once, he would have known that such a person could only be created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He couldn't come from an animal. Darwin has, 1,000 pages of evidence, of argumentation, of scientific studies. That's Acher HaMaisa. The real thing, and again, I'm just repeating what we heard all day today, the real thing that is Makarev Levavos is the sense, number one, that there is something in our neshamas, and we have to work to be sure that we have that. There is something in our neshamas that is good. And number two, we convey to the other, and we genuinely believe it, and we have to genuinely believe it, that there is something in their neshamas that is precious. It's really a pasuk in Mishlei. The pasuk in Mishlei says, "Kemayim hapanim el panim, kein lei for adam li adam." What does that pasuk mean? The Gra explains, and it's really pasuk pshat in the pasuk. Water reflects the face that you show that water. When I smile at the water, I get a smiling face reflecting back to me. When I frown at the water reflects back a frowning face. So too, the heart of a person reflects back that which is shown to it. If we show that person feelings of love, of acceptance, of caring, of concern, of empathy, of understanding what people are going through, then they will feel that way about us, about what we want to teach, about what we want to show. But that also means, and here's a little bit of ha'ara, that there has to be a sense of mutual respect. Because one of the occupational hazards that we sometimes face in the union of Kiruv Rechokim is we look at Kiruv Rechokim as a one-way street. The one-way street is, we got the truth, we got the goods, we have everything right. You have no, you know, you meaning whoever we're working with, so to speak. Even the word working with is in some ways a demeaning term, but I'll use it just because it's easier than qualifying it every time. The person we're working with is an empty vessel or a dirty vessel. We got to clean and empty and fill up with ourselves. But you know, nobody likes to feel that they're an object. Nobody likes to feel that they bring nothing to the table. Nobody likes to feel that they're there to be worked upon and formed. Rather, Kiruv Rechokim should ultimately be an exercise in interaction and mutual growth, in which we learn from each other, we grow from each other, in which perhaps a given person might have more knowledge of the Torah on one level, but maybe the other person is better in all sorts of midos. And of course, we can look at the sacrifices people make to be shomer mitzvos, or to strive, or to grow. And we have to ask ourselves those honest questions. Maybe we wouldn't necessarily have that mesiras nefesh. And only when there's a sense that you genuinely respect what the person is, and you see their chashivas, kemayim hapanim el panim, then leif ha'adam bi'adam, their heart will reflect back the Torah that you're teaching, because they see that you're machshiv them as well. And that's something we have to be very, very aware of. In this sense, the Talmud of Chaim of Elazner, it's a famous maisa, that he once paskened in a din Torah against a butcher. He paskened that the butcher's meat was treif. And the butcher, Pashut, wanted to kill him in revenge. So the butcher lured him out to an isolated place, and when he thought he was alone, the butcher took out his knife and said, I'm going to kill you, and imagine this. And there was a Talmud who was watching from a distance, because maybe the Talmud suspected something might happen. And he says, Rav Chaim Volozhiner looks at the butcher for around 30 seconds. The butcher starts crying, he throws away the knife, he goes on his knees, and he hugs Rav Chaim and he begs forgiveness. This was at the time of the early Hasidic movements. So the Talmud said, oh, we see, our gedolim doom nisim too. You're a Hasidish Rebbe. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner said, he says, no, it's not a Hasidish Rebbe, I'm just Mekayim a Pasuk. The Pasuk says, again, this is not to be tried. I would not, go across the street there to East Jerusalem and try this. But he says, the Pasuk says, Kemayim apanim alpanim kein leif adam liadam, a person feels what we feel towards that person. And when I was b'sakana, I knew I had to try to think about the goodness within this person, the yechailis, the tzelem elokim, the fact that the person must have been so torrid and so disturbed to do these things. And I was batuah when I reached a level of loving and caring about this person, that he would no longer be angry at me. Ad kedei kach, he had emuna in that pasuk, and that was the emes. This point, that Kiruv, number one, really, there are two points I'm making, but they're interrelated. One is that Kiruv ultimately comes by the force of the love and concern that you have for another. And it also comes from the Torah that you absorb, even though that Torah is not directly connected to the Shilas and Shuvas of Kiruv Rechaikim itself. And that the Kiruv must come because you're not just giving to the person, but there's a sense of mutual sharing, mutual growth. Mitalmida yaiser mikulam. This could really be the simple pshat of a Gemara in Masechta Shabbos, a famous Gemara. The non-Jew came to Shammai, teach me the whole Torah on one foot. Shammai pushed him away. Whatever the pshat is, I'll get into that. That could be time for another time. But I want to focus on Hillel's response. Hillel's response was the famous negative golden rule. Ma desani loch, what is hateful to you, lechavracha leiseyavid, do not do to the other. Ve'idach zil gemor, the rest is commentary, go and learn it. By the way, Derech Agav, this is not my main thought, the Chassam Sofer says a beautiful pshat. What's the pshat? Madasani lach is only mitzvahs ben adam l'chaveiro. That's not the whole Torah. What about putting on tefillin? What about Shabbos? What about kashrus? What's the pshat madasani lach? So the emes is, Rashi emphasizes it, because Rashi says, chavercha, your friend, is not just another human being, but it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, what is hateful to Hashem, don't do. So it's kailel, both mitzvahs ben adam l'makam and adam l'chavero. That's what Rashi himself says. But the Chassam Sofer says like this. The Chassam Sofer says that the guy is b'emes and asking a very lumdisha question. The guy is asking the question, how can I keep the whole Torah in one time, on one foot, one time, regalachas? L'chavero, there are 613 mitzvahs. Some of the mitzvahs are only b'zman hamikdash. Some are only for Kohanim, some are for men and not for women, some are for women and not for men. If I need Taryag mitzvahs to be masakin my neshama, how can I keep all of the mitzvahs bevas achas, no matter how big a tzaddik I am? The answer is there are two terutzim. One is by Avas Yisrael. You connect yourself to Gans Klal Yisrael. You connect yourself, you're machabir yourself to the nation, past, present, future. Memela, I as a yachid cannot do a lot of mitzvahs. But if I connect myself to the totality of Klal Yisrael, then the mitzvahs of the women are the mitzvahs of the men, the mitzvahs of the mitzvahs of the women, the mitzvahs of Kohanim are my mitzvahs, the mitzvahs of the past, the mitzvahs of the present. So that's the first remez. Madasani lach is the remez of Avas Yisrael. Avas Yisrael is the way in which I can have a tikkun to do those mitzvahs that I can't do myself. Now, ve'idach, he learns this way. Ve'idach means, and what's the other answer? What's the other teretz? Zil gemor Talmud Torah. Because what's the pshat? If I learn the laws of korbanos, it's as if I did korbanos. These are the two derachim in shleimus of the taryag. One is Avas Yisrael, ve'idach, and the other is Talmud Torah. But I want to focus on another point, which is nogea to this talk today. And that is, you know, Hillel is criticized by Christian writers and by secular writers. Why does Hillel talk about the negative? What is hateful to you, do not do to another. What about positive love? Like Yashka said, love thy neighbor as thyself. And indeed, he says that in the New Testament. But of course, it's in the Torah first. Now, Christian writers want to say, obviously it's a pilpul shel hevel, they want to say that Yashka had a higher level of love, because Yashka, of course, that really worked in Christianity over the years, that this is the love of loving somebody. Hillel just says, don't hurt people. Isn't positive love higher than negative love? L'chayr, it's a good kasha, especially since the Torah talks about positive love. Why does Hillel talk about the negative? Talk about loving, not talk about don't hurt somebody. But the emes is, there's a great, great message in what Hillel is teaching us. First of all, Hillel is teaching us the message of gradualism. Before you start reaching the highest levels, be sure you don't hurt people. In other words, don't think you'll become a tzaddik overnight. Rav Yisrael Salanter used to say, people want to know all of Shas. Baruch Hashem, that's an attainable goal. They want to know all of Shas in one night. Only the Vilna Gaon could do that. But they want to know all of Shas in one night and sleep 8 hours the same night. It says, Mistama, even the Gra might have had some problems there. Meaning, we want to achieve these great, great madregos. You got to go la'at la'at. You got to go a little slowly. But to take it a little deeper, when you think about not hurting somebody, the image you have is stepping back. In other words, doing is, you know, loving somebody, we think of giving, 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 giving. Not hurting is you take your hands off and you step back. And maybe Hillel is teaching us, before you can love a person, before you can help a person, you need to step back and be sure that you know the person that you're trying to help. Know who they are. Know what they need. Understand them. Respect them. They are not notches in our belt like the American Indians used to collect scalps. from all of their victims, and it was a sign of pride. And some of the African cannibal tribes would collect skulls that they would shrink. Sometimes with Kirev Rechokim, we kind of collect people as if they're objects for our mitzvos. How many would I makarev? Whatever. Hillel says, you want to love somebody, step back and know them. People are not objects for our mitzvahs. And the Altar of Slobodka used to say, Taka, and it sounds a little funny, he says, you don't do chesed l'shem shamayim. That sounds, what? What do you mean? I mean, you serve Hashem. But what he means, the Altar of Slobodka means a profound idea. You don't do any mitzvah bein adam l'chavera with the idea, I'm going to use you as my gate ticket to Olam, my key to Olam Haba. Because then, you're using the person as your chefza shel mitzvah. A person is not a pair of tefillin. A person is not a lulav or an esrog. A person, remember, tashmishei mitzvah and nizrakin, right? You could throw away, at least a lulav, could throw it into the garbage. And sometimes, I have to say, when we take the analogy of a person as my chefza shel mitzvah, it's tashmishei mitzvah nizrakin afterwards. And therefore, Hillel's yisait is a very important yisait. Before you start showering the person with love, step back and see their metzias. See how precious they are. Respect them. Care about them. And when you step back and let them be, so to speak, then you can interact. Kamayim haponim alponim, kein leiv ha'adam li'adam. And the attitude, when we don't have this attitude, there are a lot of negative consequences. First of all, and again, we can have a whole seminar on this, we know that one of the main issues in Kirev are the issues that are called follow-up. Sometimes, as it were, we might succeed in helping somebody be a Shomer Mitzvos, but there's all sorts of follow-up issues that continue after the years go by. How to interact with family, and how to integrate or become part of the main Torah community, whatever it is. But sometimes there's an idea, and again, I'm not referring to anything in particular here, but just in the world at large, where once we've made them from, let's go on to the next one. They're no longer in our range of consciousness. They're no longer in our interest. But that's because, again, we were collecting our scalps. Once we have the scalp, you know, I've done it already. I don't have to go back and scalp them a second time. What am I gaining from it? And this also brings another idea, too, of not seeing the person. And there is the idea that we are impatient if we don't do a whole job. And again, Rav Kaplan spoke about this very, very beautifully, in which we feel it's not a worthwhile investment of our time if the person, you know, within a week or 2 weeks or 6 months doesn't become totally from. We fail to recognize, as the Chayvas Halavavas writes, that there's no spiritual accomplishment that is so small that the Ribbono Shel Olam is not machshevet. There is no such thing as something that is a failure just because it is not a complete success. The Bali Musar say a wonderful thing. It's a very funny word. You know, in last week's Parsha, 2 weeks ago, in Chutz Lawrence, it was last week, we read about Moshe Rabbeinu's Avera of hitting the rock. And we have so many pshatim, what the Avera was. But many learn because he's angry at Bnei Yisrael. He calls them Mayrim. He calls them rebellious ones. And the Mefarshim say, Emerson, Moshe Rabbeinu's feeling is the following. 40 years before, they asked for water in Rephidim. And they complained, and Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock then. And 40 years later, after Matan Torah, after Meraglim, and after Kairach, the same thing is going on. So Moshe Rabbeinu's frustration is very understandable. Not a single thing has changed. We're back where we were 40 years. But there's one little difference. Mefarshim say, in Parshas Beshalach, they accused Moshe Rabbeinu that you brought us into the desert, lahamisenu bamidbor, to kill us in the desert. In Chukas, they say, you brought us into the desert, lemusenu, so that we would die. Progress. 40 years before, they accused Moshe Rabbeinu of wanting to murder them. Now they said, you dragged us here and we're going to die. Moshe Rabbeinu should have been I made. That's also progress. There's a shinoi in their perception. That's progress. There is a saying that the best is the enemy of the better. It's true in our own Aveda too, that we sometimes think if we can't be perfect, we don't even strive to do a little bit more. And yet we know, Chazal say, Ein Aveira Mechabe Mitzvah. Aveiros are Aveiros, Mitzvahs are Mitzvahs. You do a Mitzvah, the Yid says Kiddush, and then goes and is Mechalel Shabbos. Chil Shabbos is awful. Upper Kiddush he has. Kiddush he has. There's a story when the Vilna Gaon went into Gullus as a younger man. So one time he was thrown into jail for loitering. Whatever he was wanting, he was in jail. And he was in jail with a Yid who was there for Ritzicha. Ritzeach, a Jew is Ritzeach. Not even today it's not a common thing. And then it was even less common. And when they brought him bread to eat, and the Jew started eating, the Gros said to him, Nu, netila shadayim, you have to wash your hands. So the person started laughing. He says, these hands, one can imagine it was pretty threatening, these hands break necks, these hands kill people. You think HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares if I do netila shadayim? The Gros said, what does one have to do with the other? Ritzicha is a din v'cheshbon on ritzicha. Aber netila shadayim is fort netila shadayim. Meaning every mitzvah has a chashivas. And therefore the concept would be that when we see people b'tzelem Elokim, when we see their chashivas, when we see their uniqueness, then number one, we don't think we're wasting our time. In fact, the emesis, as Rav Kaplan pointed out, even if the only tayelis is they spend 5 minutes learning Torah, it's nishka felach either. That's not a bad thing either. The Gemara itself says, I don't want to get into Chabad, but the Gemara itself says, Paishi Yisrael Begufan, according to the Girsa that most Rishonim have, is karkafta d'loy monach tefillin me'olam. In other words, if a person never wore tefillin, even one time tefillin is already considered to be a hatzalah. And here I just want to end with one important idea. We read in the Torah one of the enigmatic parshios of Eisha Shifas Tayar that talks about the captive woman, etc., v'shavisa shivyai. And the Orach Chaim HaKadosh from the Zayar says that that whole parsha of capturing and crying, ubachsa esaviyah, is a remes to Chaydesh Elul. It's a beautiful thing that the Eisha Shifas Tayar is the neshama, and the milchama of the neshama is the milchama against the Yetzer Hara. And the crying is aviyah v'yasima. Aviyah is she cries for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and she cries for Knesset Yisrael, and the 30 days is Chaydesh Elul. And then we achieve a state of tahara. It's a beautiful whole explanation where the whole thing is merumas to the process of the neshama that's called an Eishah Shifas Tayar. But I want to go on one little peripheral point. Rashi says that the whole parsha of Eishah Shifas Tayar is talking about a milchemes rishus, an optional war. The wars that don't involve the seven nations of Canaan, because by a milchemes mitzvah, such as eradication of Amalek or the seven nations of Canaan, there's not going to be any captivities because lo sechaye kol nisham. So my kasha is like this, although I really can't ask a kasha from the Orach Chaim and Rashi, but my kasha is, isn't it odd that l'chaira one would think the milchama keneged the Yetzer Hara is the greatest mitzvah there is? So isn't it peculiar that the remazim to the milchama against the Yetzer Hara should be in a parsha that deals with optional wars and not dealing with obligatory wars? Why shouldn't Milchemes Yetzer Hara be in a parsha of Milchemes Mitzvah and not Milchemes Rishus? The answer is this. What is the primary difference between a Milchemes Mitzvah and a Milchemes Rishus? Milchemes Mitzvah is eradication, is annihilation. Milchemes Rishus is you capture and you subjugate and you redirect. Maybe there's a deep remez here that the real process of tshuva, and therefore kirev, should not be one of eradication or annihilation, but it should be one of transformation. What do I mean? There are two different ways a person might do tshuva in life. Yeah, one derech is to amputate your past. Sometimes we tell a person, you got to cut off your connections, cut off your talents, cut off your families, cut off your abilities, whatever those talents might be. Become a new person. Become our way. Become become a ben Torah, wear a hat and a jacket, and sitzes out. Change your past. That we might call the tshuva of amputation. Amputation is sometimes indeed a spiritual necessity, just like it's sometimes a physical necessity. Sometimes indeed, something might be so sick, so ill, so perverted, that amputation might be the only way to survive. But you know, amputation always has a cost, even if the cost is justified. Even after you lose that arm, there is phantom pain that can actually be very, very awful. And after all, it's almost impossible to truly amputate. If you ever try to delete a computer program, you know that there's all sorts of nooks and crannies where things are hiding in there. And ultimately, things come out. If you try to suppress a personality, you try to change who you are, it will often come out in very, very destructive ways. And therefore, maybe the remez is that the true mahalech of tshuva is not to amputate or destroy who you are, but to take who you are, to capture it, to take who you are and use it in ways that are conducive to avodas Hashem and human growth. It is not the tshuva of amputation, but the tshuva of transformation. All of us know, and for good reason, but again, it's an issue, that in the desire to become part of a community, there is sometimes tremendous pressure to conform, to obliterate, to destroy that which is distinct and unique within a human personality. And in the short run, that might work. In the long run, it's not going to work. It's going to cause depression. It's going to cause despair. It may cause rebellion. It may cause backsliding. It may cause rejection of Yiddishkeit. And in either way, it does not make a person an Oved Hashem. If you look at the Kuzari describes in the third Shar, the third Maimer, he describes the personality of an Oved Hashem. And again, Chazal say this many times, but he emphasizes it, and I just read it recently, so it's fresh in my mind. He emphasizes the joy that the Oved Hashem has in life, the pleasure he has in even the physical things that God has given. And the notion that if a person has talents and abilities, they're supposed to be used and not squelched. And really, that's the remez, I would suggest, in why the parsha of tshuva is in the parsha of milchemes rishus rather than a milchemes mitzvah. Avada, it's a mitzvah, but it's like a milchemes rishus in which the mitzvah is not obliteration, but the mitzvah is transformation. That is a message for the miskarev, and that is a message for the mikarev. And that is, you're not there to change somebody. In fact, the taich of tshuva, what's the word tshuva? Tshuva is to return. Returning to whom? Returning to Hashem, of course. Returning to Am Yisrael, of course. But it also means returning to yourself. Tshuva is not about changing yourself. It's about recapturing the emesa metzias that is within the person. The neshama is already holy. All we need is to help a person reconnect to what's already there. And again, as Rav Shapiro said, try not to get into the way of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's doing that. So again, I just want to again give grace yashkayach to all of you that came on a difficult tainus to be mispainin these inyanim. And as I could say, I'll repeat again, that the main way you'll be mashpia on others is by the Torah and the Kedusha and the Tikkun HaMidos that you absorb. Because if you live a life where the Shem Hashem will be Misoev al Yadechem, then you can rest assured that there will be a Hashpa.